time is 8:25 a.m. on November 20th, 2013. We will begin the contractual compliance program updates and Q&A session for ICANN 48 in Buenos Aires, Argentina, shortly.
Hey, sí, hey. Hit.
Good morning, everyone. It's 8:35. We're going to start now. We like to usually give 5-minute courtesy for everybody to travel from one location to the next. Thank you for coming to our session this morning, this early. My name is Maggie Surratt, and I'm the Vice President for Contractual Compliance. This Wednesday session is becoming a tradition for us now, what we call a high-interest topic, to allow everybody in the community to join us for a compliance update, but also for a dialogue across the different stakeholders. So it's not just one direction where we're talking only to the registrars or only to the registries or only to ALAC. Everybody joins this session. And it has been very productive, so and I hope it's going to be the same for you today. With me in the audience, I'm going to start to the far right. I have Greg DiBiase. He's on the compliance team. He processes lots and lots of WHOIS inaccuracy tickets. I have Senior Oppenheimer, Victor. Victor oversight is on the GTLD efforts, new and current. But he also, of course, supports us in other compliance capacity. Immediately on my right is Carlos Alvarez. Carlos is our oldest tenure member at this table in the compliance team. And he oversees a lot of the activities, day-to-day activities, but also contributes to a lot of the new initiatives we have in compliance. Our objective today is to present to you in about 15 to 20 minutes maximum on all these topics ahead of you on the screen. After we present, we will have a Q&A. This is where we ask the participants to just kind of like engage with us, whether it's a comment, a question, clarification, and we'll just go back to those slides and address anything you might have. And sometimes it might be questions to each other, the different stakeholders. So again, good morning and welcome to this session. So the first topic we're going to start is Greg.
ICANN's bulk WHOIS inaccuracy complaint submission is now in production. This means that users are able to submit up to 100 WHOIS inaccuracy complaints per week, and they're able to submit in one single file upload. It's based on a 3-month pilot, which we launched between July and August of this year. In this pilot, users who accepted the terms of use were able to submit up to 100 complaints per week. Each complaint was processed individually per compliance's 1-2-3 process. Of the 340 complaints received during this pilot, all were resolved within the first notice turnaround time. Whether a complaint is submitted via bulk or a single complaint submission, ICANN staff reviews complaints for validity before sending them on to the reporter. Slide, Meg. Some examples of invalid complaints are a complaint that refers to data that's not currently in the WHOIS data, a complaint that contains profanity or insulting language, or a complaint that references a matter that is simply outside the scope of ICANN's contractual compliance department. When ICANN receives an invalid complaint, they send a closure notice with a specific reason stating why the complaint was invalid. If a reporter does not respond to this, does not respond to ICANN's outreach and continues to submit invalid complaints, ICANN may temporarily suspend their ability to submit complaints. Next slide, Maggie. This has happened twice this year. In the first example, a submitter submitted 191 invalid WHOIS inaccuracy complaints within an 8-week time period. They received closure notices with the specific reasoning, and ICANN conducted outreach. Basically, in this scenario, the reporter alleged that every field in the WHOIS data was incorrect, even though the domains being reported were often well-known WHOIS privacy services or well-known websites. In the second example, 37 emails with offensive and threatening language were sent to ICANN staff. In examples such as these, where outreach is conducted and the reporter continues to submit invalid complaints, ICANN may temporarily suspend these reporters from submitting WHO is inaccuracy complaints.
For our remote participants, we were informed you cannot see the Adobe Room. Our technical support team is looking into that. Can they hear us, though? Can they? Okay. So we will continue with the presentation. The presentation will be posted on the ICANN.org website, and we apologize for the technical difficulty for not being able to see it. But it is being worked on.
Now, a very brief update on the ERP, the Expired Registration Recovery Policy. The complaint form was updated to incorporate the requirements of this policy 1 week before the policy came into effect. That was 1 week prior to August 31st. Since then, our team has received a bit over 40 complaints regarding the ERP. And basically, the most common issues that we've seen with regards to the policy is that registrars, some of them, have not updated appropriately their registration agreements to include their registration agreements and their auto renewal and deletion policies to include the requirements under the policy. Some are still not sending the renewal notifications as they should. If you all remember, they have to send two renewal notifications prior to the expiration date, one 30 days, the other a week before, and if there's no renewal, the last one 5 days afterwards. Some are still not interrupting the resolution path, and some thought that because the domains expired before August 31st, even though they remained in not a renew after September 1st, that they didn't have to interrupt the resolution path, and we've had to address some of these cases. But obviously with the intent of protecting the registrants based on what the policy provides us. With regards to outreach activities, our team has conducted has participated in several outreach meetings, specifically regarding the 2013 RAA. In the meetings that were held in Los Angeles, in China, in Xiamen, and Berlin, and also this coming Friday, there's going to be and this week on Friday, we're going to have the 2013 RAA Register Outreach for registrars in Latin America. It'd be really good if the local registrars are able to attend. It's a full-day event, and it's going to be a very good opportunity for increasing your knowledge and becoming more familiar with the new agreement. At a very high level, upon execution of the new registrar accreditation agreement, registrars must start entering into agreements with their resellers. The 2009 RAA provided that registrars may enter. Now they have to. They have to comply also with the specific format that's provided by the specification to the new RAA. This is being addressed by our team. It's been somewhat of a time-intensive labor to detect the instances in which the registrars that are executing the new RAA are not complying with the format that's being addressed through inquiries and seeking their cooperation. Registrars must also provide specific information to ICANN and publish that information on their website. You can read the information that's required, that's up on the slide, correspondence address, the requirements, the specificities of the address, the officer's full name, contact information and position, and name of the ultimate parent entity of the registrar. There are registrars that are part of large families or that are owned by a subsidiary of an affiliate of another affiliate of a parent company that's owned by someone in the lease. So the ultimate parent company. They have to provide ICANN notice within 7 days when they become bankrupt, when the registrars or their officers or directors are convicted, and when they are victims of security breaches. Our team has now new and better tools. Specifically, there are additional reasons for suspending and terminating the RAA. And the CEOs, los presidentes o los gerentes, have to certify on January of each year that the registrar for the last year complied with their obligations before ICANN, basically. Now, with regards to what our team has done to become ready to address the new agreement, we've provided two new Learn More pages, FAQs that are specific to the new provisions or the updated provisions that are in the 2013 RAA. Those Learn More pages are specifically related to privacy protection services and WHOIS format. You'll find them in the compliance site. If you go to ICANN.org, then resources, then you'll find compliance, and then you scroll down a little bit, there's complaint submission and FAQ, and there you'll see a lot of FAQs. Among those, you'll find these new two ones. We're also in the process of adding 11 new complaint types that will address some new obligations that the community and the users will be able to complain about if they consider that the registrars are not complying with. And we're also updating 4 existing complaint types to address changes from the current agreement to the new one. Those basically WHOIS inaccuracy, register contact information, and those that are mentioned in the slide. Starting January 1st of 2014, registrars will have to provide abuse contact, will have to comply with certain abuse contact requirements, basically to provide a point person, a contact person for receiving and handling complaints regarding abuse. And they have to follow certain, they have to publish the process that they are supposed to follow. They have to reply within 24 hours. This is specifically related to complaints coming from law enforcement from their own jurisdictions. So it's a little narrow, but it's going to be there. Registrars and resellers must provide a link to registrant benefits and responsibilities, which is an obligation that's very similar to one that's already existing in the 2009 RAA. There's the WHOIS accuracy program specification obligations. There are the data retention specification obligations that registrars have to maintain data and records for 2 years, but if their local law doesn't allow them to retain data for so long, then they can follow a certain process with ICANN to be waived of that obligation so that they don't have to violate or breach their own local law. There's the WHOIS service level agreement. That's registrars will now have to start providing the WHOIS service complying with specific timeframes. Their servers will have to respond 0.1 milliseconds or 0.2 milliseconds. They're going to have to provide response times. They're going to have to provide availability. So their WHOIS servers will have to be up 99.99999, whatever's mentioned in the RAA. I don't recall on top of my head, but it's either 100% or 99.999999%. And then they will have to comply with the proxy and privacy registration program that many people in the community are looking forward to. This is for you to take a quick look of the provisions that are effective at execution versus those that will become effective on January of next year. You can find them. The slides are going to be available later on. Now I turn it over to Victor.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone. I'm Victor Oppenheimer, Senior Manager. And I'd like to give you a quick update on new utility compliance efforts. Since Durban, our compliance efforts have been primarily on the implementation of the requirements identified during the planning phase, starting with the phase that is called transition to delegation, in other words, contracting. The compliance group performs compliance checks on those applicants that are identified as able to sign the agreement. So we perform a compliance checks on them based on any cross-affiliation declaration. And the design of our implementation phase was based on the, if you will, the birth of a new UTLD from contracting to Sunrise Claim Services and then general registrations. We have been very busy designing the web forms for complaints or reports from end users regarding alleged non-compliance by registry operators. For all those processes that you see identified on the right half of the slide, under general, and I'll cover some of them in my next slides. Next, please. The takeaway from this slide is that the scope of our monitoring efforts, it's pretty much the entire registry agreement, and of course the applicable consensus policies are incorporated by reference. That means the four dispute resolution procedures, any requirements, any right protection mechanisms that are required under the relevant document for Sunrise Services and Claim Services. And a reminder that the registry agreement limits any audits to Article 1, the warranties and representations of Article 1, and the covenants in Article 2. And so this is a snapshot of where we are right now in terms of the, as I mentioned before, the web forms that are completed or for internal monitoring or internal complaints or public-facing external complaints. For example, under the completed column, the first two are data escrow and monthly reports. Those are really not visible to the public. Those are internal processes that on a regular basis the compliance team monitors, and if there is any non-compliance, a complaint would be generated on our part. On the other hand, processes that are public would be, for example, Sunrise, the centralized zone file access for those end users having difficulties accessing or getting access from the TLDs on the relevant zone files. On the right hand of the slide are the reports that we're working on in terms of educational materials like FAQs and Learn More, or the actual web form for complaint submission. And yesterday we conducted an outreach with all the representative of all the 24 GTLDs that have been delegated so far. It was very successful. The idea of this outreach is to start collaborative communications with these new registry operators early in the term of their agreement and set the tone for collaboration throughout the agreement.
So what you've heard today relates to all the initiatives that are underway at ICANN. We've got a lot of work going on. We thought 10 complaints covered 2001 and 2009 RAA and the 18 TLDs. We are going from 10 to almost 40 different complaint types by June of 2014. So all the analysis and the reviews and putting forth a information and web forms to be able to not only receive reports and complaints, but mostly to be able to provide information to the public explaining what this is about and why. So that's the effort the team is really focused on, because we can receive, we can process, but it's how is it perceived, how is it understood by the community to be able to really file complaints with compliance. So the next few slides here, I'm going to provide you an update on the audit program. I'm going to go back to the other slide, but what I want to focus on is a program that we launched last year. Last year, the board approved contractual compliance to put forth a three-year strategy, methodology, and approach to audit all the contracted parties that are in the domain name industry to date. The scope was so huge because we had never conducted such an audit at ICANN. It doesn't exist in the industry. So we really needed to put a scope that was based on the risk of to the public. So the provisions that were in the scope of the contract that relate to the audit provision were put forth, and we conducted year one last year. The year one last year consisted of 317 registrars and 6 TLDs. We had a 99% compliance results. Year two started last month. This is the timeline and the 5 phases we go through. But I'm going to move to this slide here to share with you the scope of year two. So we sampled again the remaining sample from the current registrars. And this list here on the right provides you how many registrars from each country were sampled and are in scope for year two audit. On the left, it gives it to you in numbers. So we also selected 317. And you notice right below that, there's a row that says total year one rollover. What that means is the rollover here consists of 5 registrars that in year one were found non-compliant, and they had to put forth a remediation plan. Many registrars executed and completed remediation plan in year one. Those 5 had different activities, complexities, whatever reason, it was not completed. But the plan was very clear. They delivered to the plan, but the program had closed. So we rolled them into year two, and they are the lucky winners to get audited again this year. So in year two, we will be able to validate that everything that they remediated is consistent with their agreement with ICANN and to service the community. For the registries, that's the sample size below. But I'd like to remind the audience that not all registries are obligated to be audited, and those registries are still collaborating. Because when people think of an audit, some people don't like it. Okay, I come from the industry, so I love audits. But even before I became a compliance, audit gives us an opportunity to improve, to request budget and improve better. So the collaboration with the contracted parties in this audit exercise has been very effective. So let me go back to this slide. This slide has titled Self-Internal Audit Exercise. Self means contractual compliance conducted an internal exercise to audit ourselves. People can say, how can you audit yourself? Well, the consistency of our team is very clear. We have a risk and audit manager that is 100% focused on that function. That manager does not work in the day-to-day activities for compliance, so we don't have a conflict of interest. Their focus is specifically on contractual compliance, risk, and audit. He is managing the current year two program and the entire program, but we had an opportunity, as you all might remember, not long time ago, we consolidated our processes, our tools, our procedures were documented, so we wanted to take a self-exercise and audit ourselves. We created what we call 45 controls. The controls focus on the process, some system procedures, communication. So the controls varied about people, processes, and tools. And the risk and audit manager interviewed, sampled, and conducted the audit on us. Of the 45 total controls, he identified 8 findings that we were not in compliance with. So the exceptions were noted, and it related to 2 areas, a system and a procedural, which we were expecting. We had just completed our system consolidation, not even a month later. It is crazy to run an audit that soon, but we wanted to immediately be proactive, knowing what's ahead of us with 2013 and the new G efforts. So the compliance team immediately corrected the procedural items because that's critical for us. We corrected it. It was completed in August. The software updates have been corrected and tested and will be deployed in December. I'm sorry, that's a mistake. It's December 2013. There's a plan to conduct a second internal audit in May. May, as you know, the ICANN works on a fiscal calendar year. So the first audit was done last July. Now we're going to conduct the second internal audit in May, and we will report back to the community on this activity. So we talk about all these consolidations, processes, and tools. How do we measure our progresses, and what do we do about that? I want to share this one slide with you here, but this is going to also be shared in tomorrow's forum on who is improvements. But I wanted to share with you is how is progress and what do we do when we implement all these functions or processes. First thing when we realize is not only the volume of who is, we will always have a volume of who is inaccuracies. That's the number one complaint we have. But what we realized is we wanted to measure our success rate. We know we had fragmented tools, inconsistent process, lack of documentation, but we wanted to start measuring, and we started measuring in this September 2012 because everything was so fragmented, but we started collecting the data via Excel sheets. I know it's manual, but we needed to start standardizing baby steps, like we say. So we wanted to start with the process. The process was very different across the different compliance team members, and the tool that was in place at the time was very different than what we have today. But all I can report on is 2 things. We wanted to measure it and keep it simple. So we started with a consistent process, and what we are showing you here on the graph are 2 columns. Hopefully you can attend tomorrow's session, but in case you don't, I wanted to provide you this. So the first column is the average turnaround time in business days from the day from when ICANN compliance receives a complaint, it's validated, and it's opened and sent to the registrar. The yellow column shows a full life cycle of a complaint from when it is received to when it is closed. Closed meaning resolved. If you look at when we were still heavily lack of automation, consistency, you know, you start here. We had a peak here because we had a high volume, and we created in this time frame what we call the war room. It's not a fun term, but you bring lunch, you can put people in one room. was a great opportunity to train the entire compliance team how to process who has inaccuracies, how to validate responses received from the registrars. And what we did here, it gave us an opportunity not only to train and on the process that rolled up in full automation mid-March. So a lot of here was still manual process. But then in mid-March, we rolled out the first complaint type in the consolidated system, and look what happened. When you have better visibility to data, you have an automated process, consistent process, you can track it, and it prompts you, it's in front of you under one roof, one area, and the team has been consistently trained. Now you see the turnaround time from beginning to closure. So the process was reduced, the automation helped us bring more visibility, consistency, and reporting. On the metrics, I'm sorry, we've already started the metrics slide if you have not noticed, guys. Another thing we rolled out recently within the compliance team is what we call pulse surveys. If you have been reading our monthly updates, we try to provide a quarterly pulse survey result. Why do we need a pulse survey? When you are providing a service, which compliance is providing a service to the community? You need to come back and validate the satisfaction that not only the reporter or also the complainant is experiencing, but also the contracted parties. So compliance, at the closure of a complaint, sends out a 5-question pulse survey. It is embedded in the closure notification. The survey is sent to the reporter and to the contracted party, in this case the registrars, because that's where most of the activities are occurring. And we ask them those 5 questions. The last question on the survey is, overall, how do you rate the complaint experience? The survey results are here. They vary from very easy. Basically, when you are submitting a complaint, when you are collaborating with the compliance team, the questions focus on process, system, people, and overall satisfaction. We do have an opportunity here to look at the not at all easy. The challenge we have is that the response rate is still low. And so we're trying to see how we can increase that. But what we're doing with the survey is also building KPIs. What is it we're going to improve on? We put forth a very extensive effort on building FAQs, what we refer to as frequently asked questions. We improved the website. So we wanted to measure what is the impact of that. We did not have much traffic or a lot of what we call easy FAQs out there. We inherited whatever was there. We took on an intense effort to revamp it, make it user experience friendly, put it in English. And we have been measuring the what we call the compliance page web hits. The interesting factor in this, and again, I receive this data. I don't have it immediately, but we receive it from the web team. The sample shows that 80% of the users are unique, so we are getting traffic. What that has also helped us is that we have seen a reduction in some of the common complaints because people are more informed about what to do in certain cases. On the bottom part, as you all probably remember, Fadi announced a meeting or two ago that on myicann.org, there is now a tab that is compliance metrics. It is static. It's updated monthly. But we have been tracking the traffic also to those pages to see if people are using it. The metrics on the MyICAN are serving mostly, we get a lot of questions and comments and feedbacks from people participating in policy development or working groups. We collect a lot of data. You go on the MyICAN, you'll see a lot of data. But how do we sort the data? What do we do with it? And how do we measure the opportunities for improvement? This slide shows the legends on the bottom. This slide shows the five ICANN regions, and it's a report for the period from the last ICANN meeting till now. So we capture the volume of domains for that region. We capture the number of registrars for the region. And we definitely look at the number of complaints, and then we take it at a percentage so we can have an apple-to-apple comparison. You take it to what we call a normalized measurement. It is not fair to only measure by the volume of complaints. We have very large registrars. We have very small boutique registrars. Volume in this case is not a good story to tell. For us to be able to look at the regions and put forth an effort, where do we need to focus? For example, we had put forth a very intense effort on the Asia-Pacific region last trimester. This trimester, we're focusing on Latin America, because look at the percent of registrars with complaints for the region. I wish I can tell you we can measure and bring that down. We're trying, but we haven't been able to really see if we can truly bring it down. What we are seeing, though, is that a better understanding. The most common factor in those two regions that we saw is a lack of interpretation or understanding of the process and lack of follow-up and follow-through. So the outreach activities for those two regions focus on understanding when you receive a notice or an inquiry, how to respond, when to respond by, what to provide. So we are also ramped up our staff because we have a much intense global presence now, and we can cover the time zones during their time zones in the languages. So when we are communicating to the regions in our notices, sometimes we send it in an additional language. You will always see it in English, but we add the extra language. For example, you see it English and you have Mandarin. You see it English, you have Spanish. The reason we keep both languages is because the ICANN compliance team is global, and we want to start to be able to do what we call around-the-globe service providing. That allows any team member not only to look at it in that native language, but also the common language for us is English. So we have focused on those two regions to try to highlight the importance of how to respond, by when, what to provide, what's considered valid data, and what is it that, and how is it they're not interpreting their obligations properly. This slide is looking at it. Now, again, you collect data, now you can tell a picture and start looking at the trends. This is the registrar complaint trends for the region. Down below here, we're graphing it to show that, yeah, we did in August have a higher volume of trends, but we saw a reduction. This reduction by almost 0.5 is due to the FAQs that we built. That's where we saw heavier web traffic on the FAQs. It took away what we call the customer questions because they were clarified in the FAQs. Now we are seeing a little bit incline in the volume for October. And we can anticipate a lot many more complaints to come our way, because you heard earlier Greg update you that not only compliance can receive who is inaccuracy complaints as a single complaint, compliance now can receive what we call multiple complaints at a time, and now we just launched in production what we call bulk complaints. So we expect to have a lot more volume show. And we'll report back to you to see what does that mean and how is it translating. I wanted to share this slide with you. You hear us talk about the process that we rolled out. How do we measure the success of the process? The success of the process is related to what we call here on the left side, TAT, means for turnaround time. I'm not introducing another abbreviation. We used it in a previous slide. Turnaround time is important. It's important for you as community members. It's important for the registrars. It's important for compliance. When you file a complaint, it's like going to the restaurant. You want to eat your food. You want to know that's coming. You want to see it happen. When you file a complaint, you want to know that it is going to come to fruition. You're going to have an answer and a resolution and a closure. So some of the turnaround times we have with the registrar, actually one of them that's very contractually binding is the who is inaccuracy. The registrars are supposed to take reasonable steps to investigate and work with the registrants to correct the who is inaccuracy. And that obligation is tied to 15 days. Other contractual compliance obligations, what compliance has put forth in collaboration with the contracted party, is a turnaround time of what we call 5 business days. So you've heard us talk about first notice or first inquiry in the process, second notice, third notice. This is what we call the prevention or the collaboration or the informal resolution. The only thing the community will see on those is volume and turnaround times. You will never see who has the highest volume. You will never see who has the biggest complaint in this, because this is an opportunity for ICANN to work with the contracted party to resolve and work on issues. Now, in that informal resolution, if and when the contracted party has not provided enough information or has not responded, we do enforce, which I point you to the right side of the table. It is our obligation to enforce the contract. That's what compliance does. But you cannot just jump to enforcement without collaboration and trying to address the problem first. So you give the opportunity and the benefit of doubt to resolve the issue. And based on my tenure at ICANN, many of the issues, as you see, not only from the volume of complaints we reflect here, guys. When I first came on board, first, this process did not exist. We rolled it out in September. You saw the high bars. Our objective is that we're trying to see if we can truly eliminate a third notice. That will be my ultimate goal. It's not fair to put that goal on the team yet this year. We have way too many initiatives at hand. But I always like to put a vision out there for us, like a goal as an organization. Why is that important? That means that not only ICANN, but also the contracted party and the community are resolving issues and the first or third notice without reaching enforcement. So you can see the volume, how it decreases. First notice is always going to be high. We do not have control of how many complaints we receive. Our control begins in making sure that we have a response from the registrar based on the turnaround time. We have the right data that we request from them for us to review and validate and follow up. All this data that we capture during the informal resolution, if and when a registrar has been breached or a contracted party has been breached, the chronology is provided in the breach. So the community will know. And if you go on our website under the notices, you open any breach notice since late 2011 to now, you will see a consistent approach. It's a business format letter, very straightforward, about a page. It has a little bit of a detail about what, but the most important section that is consistent across every breach notice is a chronology. The chronology will list when first notice was sent, to whom. The second notice was sent. What's the date for that turnaround time? Who it was sent to. In the second notice, the compliance team waits a few days, and if we don't hear from the registrar, we initiate a phone call during their time zone. So the staff either comes late or leaves early, whatever, to be able to accommodate the time zone to initiate the call to the registrar. We capture who was the call made to, what number. We capture if there was a response and a summary. So the chronology has a window for the community to see what went on here. In the enforcement phase, if a registrar takes care of business before an enforcement, you will never see it. Closure rates. You heard us talk earlier about complaint closures. we lost network connectivity. So network connectivity in Adobe?
Yes, but we're already back.
We're back. Okay. Sorry for the interruptions. So you heard us talk about closure rates earlier. You saw on the slides before how much volume we receive, how much gets to first, second, third. Our target, when we started this year, it was an internal target. So first time I share with the community, it's by request to a certain gentleman sitting on this table, keeps asking for KPIs. But it's also, we really need to, not just because of that request, we really need to start putting forth these KPIs. And now we're feeling more confident that the tool is coming together, the data is clean, and we can really start reporting more efficiently to you. We had put a target of 55%. Reason we put it at this rate, because we launched a new tool. We incurred a lot of new training. We hired a lot of new staff. So we needed to put a target where we can make sure the team is going to be able to successfully meet it and hopefully exceed it. And that's what this chart shares with you. The target includes several factors: the volume, the staff processing, and the turnaround time. Compliance performance measurements. You've heard me talk about turnaround time, closure rate, and self-improvement, year two audit program. So the metrics we built for this year, for our success for fiscal year 14, relate to these five bullets that I show you here. Guess what, guys? It's really important, and tell me if you don't agree, but we are measuring our compliance readiness for 2013 RAA based on the additional complaints, FAQs, readiness, training, procedures. There's a lot of factors that go into readiness. It's not just, yes, the contract is signed, it's in effect. It's everything that leads up to it. Reviewing the contract, identifying the provisions that we need to make public-facing to allow you to provide complaints or file a report. It's allowing us internally to do monitoring. What do we measure? What do we report? Building FAQs, building procedures, making sure the system is updated. So compliance readiness, it's month upon month effort. Same for new registry. And you heard me say, we're going from 10 to 40. So by June 2014, our success rate is having all those new 30 complaint or report types built. Gradually, of course, we're not just going to do boom, everything at the same time, because provisions are becoming in effect gradually. So we will gradually start rolling them out. Our success measure for this is going to be completion of all those things. Our success factor here for completing year two audit program per schedule. We've reported to you when we're going to be doing the different phases. Our success rate for the internal audit is to pass and improve on our review in May by 20%. And our success for the complaint closure rate is to improve by 10%. I do want to remind everyone that, please, we have spent a lot of effort and time listening to the community, what would make the website and the information better and more usable. Please go to the compliance website on ICANN.org. We are also providing monthly updates in the six UN languages. In addition, the FAQs, or the frequently asked questions, before you submit a complaint, if you click on the frequently asked questions for a complaint, it is provided in the six UN languages. Excuse me. So we have provided, and we want to start making sure that the community has access to this data. So we're trying to market it because we are seeing traffic, but I think we can increase that too. With that, it concludes the agenda topics we have for this morning, and I will start taking questions from the audience. Please identify your name and affiliation before you speak.
Hi, Shane Tews with 463 Communications. How many people do you have on staff right now?
So we have currently 18 full-time employees, and we are in the process of establishing presence in Singapore.
Okay.
We also have contractors supporting us.
And are they designed by specific constituency expertise? I mean, is your training them, since we have this multi-stakeholder, there's people, a lot of different things that they're interested in monitoring. And thank you, by the way, your presentation was very good.
Thank you. They are designed by expertise in the audit, and in we have a lot of what we call legal staff on my team. They do not function in that legal capacity, guys. They function from a contractual compliance review understanding, because a lot of the people we work with on the other side, whether it's contracted parties or complainants or reporters, are of a legal background. A lot of the reports we receive have, like UDRPs, have legal need for it. But I have a very strong team that's also from the what I call business and technology and compliance experience.
Great.
So it's not constituency-based. It's our focus is truly the contract.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Yes.
Hi, Maggie. My name is Evan Leibovich. I'm vice chair of the At-Large Advisory Committee. In a slide that you had back there, you mentioned it showed in the July to October timeframe that there were 24 issues that were open. It said open after enforcement, and 11 went to breach. Yes, that slide, right? How what happens in the gap? How is it that there's 24 that make it all the way through, and only 11 get to breach? What happens in that gap?
Even this is Carlos, I'm senior manager with Maggie's team. Those 24 that you see there in enforcement is a step in the process. Once the ticket gets sent, the third notice, after the 5 days, the system will automatically move that ticket to the next queue that's internally called enforcement. It doesn't mean that a notice of breach has been issued. It only means that the staff has to review the registrar's or registrar's response, decide whether a notice of breach has to be issued or closed. It's just a step before the issue becomes a breach, a formal breach, or gets closed.
So does that mean that the other 13 there were closed before it went to breach?
Yes.
Okay. I have another question, and I hope you don't think it's out of scope, but since right now you perform one of the most public-facing components of what ICANN does, do you collect any stats on the complaints that come in that are not valid for what you need to do? That is, somebody puts in a complaint and it's beyond what you can do. Either it's for a CC or it's for something not to do that compliance can't handle. This isn't necessarily your headache, but those kind of statistics are very, very necessary to help move ICANN in other directions regarding its public focusing.
Yes, whenever the team closes a complaint, we have included in the system several resolve codes, and those resolve codes are specific to the reasons why each complaint is being closed. There are many different of these resolve codes depending on the complaint type. There are some generic that apply to all the complaint types. There are some very specific to each subject matter area, some that are specific to transfers, some that are specific to renewals, to ERP, DDP. So we are now starting to be able, this is just as of some months ago, I don't remember exactly how long, we are able to have metrics on the reasons for closure of each specific complaint. So yes, we have that.
So let me jump ahead of you, Evans. I know your next question. Let me see how well I know my audience. When are you going to report to us on those?
It's just a matter of if you're collecting the information, having access to it, I guess, is the next useful question.
What I would like to add to what Carlos just shared with you, the team just went through an exercise to identify and define what we call resolved codes. Again, being in compliance, guys, I know people say your world is boring because we're black and white. One and one equals two. We're fact-based. And guess what? We love it because it's really easy to understand and put forth processes to support it. So the exercise we just conducted, it took several weeks, I'll be honest with you, is collecting all the different resolve codes that were being used. We want to bring a standard approach to them, a standard definition to them. In a previous life, before joining ICANN, I never exceeded 10 resolve codes. But previous life was much more simpler than here at ICANN. So we're up to about 40 plus resolved codes. The team is finishing up. We're still capturing resolve codes. What we want to do is make sure there is a consistent message so we can consistently report to you what we call apple-to-apple comparison. We'll bring an update based on the progress made over the next trimester to you. The other thing I want to point out to is we had always been reporting to the community about out-of-scope compliance complaints. If you refer to some of the previous presentations from previous ICANN meetings, that used to be captured in a category called customer complaints. It relates to all the different categories that Carlos listed. The reason I put slide is this? 22, I think, for the team on the phone. The reason I put slide 22 back on the screen here in front of the audience is I had just shared with you how frequently asked questions showed and helped in the reducing some of the volume of complaints. We wanted to measure the success of all these FAQs. We started building the frequently asked questions around what we call out-of-scope complaints. And we've seen people, we still have a placeholder. They cannot submit a complaint, but there is an FAQ with a clear direction what to do. So we can now, if we still have something that comes through because of other issues, we can report on those, but we can also reduce the other complaints.
Sorry, just to follow up, and I'll stop at that point. But does that mean, so if somebody comes in and let's say they have a complaint about a CC, which is beyond what you are able to process, does that mean that you point to the FAQ or you have like a boilerplate answer for them that says, sorry, we can't help you, but here's a way to find help elsewhere? My concern right now is just leaving people thinking that they've got to a place and that you can't get there from here. I'm just trying to reduce the amount of dead ends, even if it's something you can't help with directly.
Yes, yes, we've done that. I just, again, for the team on the phone, if you go to the ICANN website linking to the complaint submission and FAQ, you will see how we have addressed that, Owen, Evan. So we have, for example, about CCTLDs. It's presented in the different languages. It guides them. It tells them what's the list and what to do. So we have built in and taken all that into consideration.
I'm Paul McGrady. I'm a partner at Winston & Strawn. I am also the author of the domain name treatise for LexisNexis. I am the chair of the subcommittee on Internet governance for the International Trademarks Association. Since Stacy first arrived on the scene a number of years ago, when ICANN was doing nothing about compliance and started to do something about compliance, I've had the happy occasion to state at each meeting I was in attendance that I saw forward movement and therefore was able to say a word of encouragement. I'm sad to say that this is the first time where I have to say that I don't see forward movement. We have a lot of data, but from a practical end-user standpoint, the processes, at least to me, and maybe some anecdotal data is helpful, I don't know if it is, but it really feels like, and I apologize for the colloquialism here, some of you may not get this, but it feels like the IRS and the registrar question ticket systems had a baby. We really are very much, at least I am feeling a runaround. I have attempted to use the system where there was a question involving both a UDRP compliance issue and a transfer policy compliance issue. Halfway through, staff tried to close the ticket. I had to beg that the ticket remained open. I have been trying to deal with a particular registrar that is insisting on the provision of passport information in order to issue an authorization code. They will not issue an authorization code to the administrative contact email now associated with the domain names following EDRP. We are on record as counsel for the client attempting to get these domain names not only moved into the name of the complainant, but also away from a non-compliant registrar in a jurisdiction where these domain names should not be. All we've received is hassle. I really would like to understand the training process, because I'm left with an unfortunate feeling that either people aren't being trained on how all these policies work together, and in fact, you know, at the end of a UDRP complaint, if you win, there's a transfer, so those things can't be bifurcated, or in the alternative, people are just, and this is what I don't want to see happen, but I'm afraid it is, and this is what happens when organizations grow and build systems and get 40 resolution codes, that people are just trying to close a ticket. That they are motivated to close a ticket. That if you can resolve this, then you get to put a resolved number in your on your file, and that's a gold star for you. So, for what it's worth, I think that you know, all these things are great. All these metrics and measuring this and measuring that are great. But I think that the human element is gone, and a true desire to help appears to be gone. And would encourage you guys to step back from all the numbers and all the pretty charts and all that other stuff and ask yourselves, are you really getting there? And in relationship to the satisfaction survey, I would also ask that you guys step back from that and see, look back, maybe you did this, but have you had an expert look at the reply rates for people who've been hassled for weeks? And who may not be happy either with the process or the end result, and how likely they are to respond to yet one more thing from you versus the people who had a quick resolution. And, you know, essentially fatigue on the part of the people who are trying to use this system, and then handicap these results for that fatigue so you get a real number of how people are actually feeling. A number by itself can be just a number. So I encourage you to look at that to see if you're getting any data out of your satisfaction survey that matters. You said something that it was interesting that you can't control the number of complaints that you get. I don't know that that's completely true, which leads me to, after my pontification, my actual question. I think that you can't control the number of complaints by publishing registrar data. I know that you are. You mentioned that you don't do that, and I was curious, what is the justification for not publishing the specific data about non-compliant registrars until the breach notice? It's important strategy information for potential complainants under the UDRP. It's also important consumer protection information for when registrants choose a registrar. As far as I know, there's no privacy right in that information. ICANN is under a lot of criticism for appearing to be merely a trade association for its contracted parties. And this, from the outside, looks like you're shielding something, right? If you are going to place mom in a nursing home, you better believe you're going to try to find out complaint information. Even if those complaints ultimately are found to be unsubstantiated, you want to know how many complaints they had. And it's like that for almost any other industry. You buy a car, even if somebody complained about the Toyota and it turned out that it was the person hitting the gas pedal instead of the brake, you still want to read the article about that. And so I don't know what's the rationale for ICANN shielding its registrars for this kind of information, because I think it would be quite eye-opening to see exactly who the four or five big problem makers are out there that are causing most of these issues for us and you.
Okay, just give me one second. You've asked three things. I want to just confirm one thing before I respond. Okay. I just wanted to confirm. Thank you for bringing three items to my attention. What I'll do is there are some things I'll need to follow up on personally. The first one, so no forward movement. I don't agree with that, but then it's not about agreeing or not. But it's most importantly, it's from your perspective, because you are not receiving a service, and it's in relation to a specific complaint that touched you.
Yeah, and, so, I don't need for you to address the specific complaint. I'm not.
Yeah. May I please finish answering? Yeah,
you bet. And I would. All I wanted to do was to confirm.
Yes.
Yes, I agree that what I said was anecdotal, and I'm not expecting you to agree that there's no forward movement. That's just, as you said, my perspective, and it's one that is based upon having watched the compliance department very carefully and, frankly, having been a big fan for a decade. So,
my turn? Thank you. So I've always told my team, if there is a perception out there, there is some reality to it. So I want to thank you for bringing this to my attention about the run around. And I wrote it down. And what I'm going to do is I will take it internally. And I will internally do what we call a root cause analysis to see the status of that specific instance, what happened along the process, where are the opportunities for training, as you were stating, or improved communication, and we will respond to you. And you will get a response where I will be CC'd on it. I have Carlos to my right here. We're taking a few vacation days after the meeting, but if you will allow us a little time, and we promise to get back to you on this one, and I will make sure it's on my calendar. I'm not going to address both surveys. You know, we can have mixed emotion, mixed feelings about surveys. We all receive surveys left and right. It's just basically about our preference. But I do want to highlight one thing about Pearl's surveys, Paul. We receive rating. We also receive comments. I and my team, and I have a gentleman on my team who is specialized in metrics, performance measurement, reporting, extensive years of operation and customer service. So he and I pay close attention not only to the rating, but the verbal feedback. And we take those and try to identify opportunities to improve them or get in touch with the person who put forth that to create clarity. So we do give it a lot of importance. As to your last comment regarding my statement about we don't have control over the number of complaints, and you were saying that could be resolved by compliance publishing registrar data. So let me address that. I don't know how that relates to it, but we do publish a lot of data. And if you are at all familiar with our compliance process, which we published, but most importantly, I want to pull it up here on the screen, is a process that we built with the community, where in the process, we clearly came as a community. I conducted personally those sessions across all the areas and asked for feedback over two meetings before we finalized and institutionalized it. Sorry, my screen is not very, it's cutting off. I don't know why. But I went to the website for the remote participants on the compliance website under process. And I clicked on the overall compliance process. There has got to be an opportunity, no matter what business or what industry you work in, you have to allow for what we call an informal resolution. Informal resolution is between two parties where you have to work. It's not about lack of transparency. It's about ability to first, is this a valid complaint? Because you don't want to publish everything you receive. If it is, you want to have the ability to work with the contracted parties to address it and give them the opportunity to resolve it. You cannot just automatically publish everything. Having said that, the bad actors, or what we refer to it, I don't want to say bad actors, I'm sorry for that, but the contracted party that reaches what we call an enforcement stage, From a public perspective, that is serious because they really have breached their contract. So as I was stating earlier, if you go to the breach notices, we do provide the chronology and all the events that led up to the enforcement. So yes, we do not publish it during the informal because we do want the opportunity to resolve it. And the resolution rates are phenomenal. I go back to, again, that's why we look at metrics. Because if we were not seeing those resolution rates, back to the volume. Here, let me just pull it up quickly. The volume is going to vary by the registrar side, size, like I was saying earlier. So it's not fair to just publish volume. It's not telling you a full story. And again, by the time it reaches an enforcement, everything is visible to the community about what led up to this breach and why.
I understand that, and it doesn't answer the question, but thank you. Because the question is, what's the rationale for shielding the information when it has the potential of being very useful to consumers and making their choices? I haven't heard a rationale for that other than you want a chance to work it out quietly with a contracted party. But I don't think that's not a rationale. And it's not true. Maybe in the domain name industry, it may be true. It obviously is true. But in the real world and in other industries, it's not true that there are no complaint data published by essentially regulators. I mean, there's complaint data of all sorts and all kinds. And so I understand what you're saying. I appreciate your response, but it doesn't answer the question.
Is it Paul? I want to follow up on that and thank you for that from the point of view of at large that's been working on this as well. I just want to follow up and ask the question again, maybe rephrasing it a bit. Is the desire to not disclose the data at that first level, is that something that is legally part of the RAA? In terms of you sent something before, is there a right to privacy in the initial stages? And so is the lack of disclosure, is that because of something that's contracted, so that there's a contracted right to privacy in the initial stages? Or is this simply a matter of courtesy, or what is behind not putting that data forward? Is it a convention? Is it a policy? Is it a contractual requirement? And, you know, in terms of, for instance, you might be able to speed up the process if you said, okay, if after the second notice we're going to disclose your name. That might speed things up even further. And in terms of helping consumers make an informed choice about what registrar to use going forward, this would be a phenomenally good tool. So I guess I just want to follow up, number one, agreeing with a lot of what Paul said, and also asking where is, at a very specific point, what is the basis upon which you're not disclosing the registrar data, whether that is an imposition on you or just an internal choice made?
So the desire not to publish or disclose, and let me make sure I understand what is it you're looking for publishing. Correct me if I'm wrong, what I'm hearing, you want data about the volume of complaints per registrar? Is that what you're asking for?
It would be very useful to have information about the number of complaints, mm-hmm. and whether or not those complaints were ultimately substantiated. And then if they were substantiated, whether or not they were ultimately resolved, right? And so if I have a registrar and there are 10 complaints against me and 10 are unsubstantiated, then I know as a consumer that people just complain about these people, but they're good folks, and it turns out that they were complaining about nothing. Mm-hmm. If there are 10 complaints against me, 9 are substantiated, 1 is not, mm-hmm. then we know that these are people who have not they're not training their people, or they don't care about contractual compliance, I don't want to do business with them. If they're not, if they don't care about complying with ICANN's consensus policy, then as a consumer, I don't want to do business with them. And also, as an attorney, if I'm going to enforce a trademark right, I need to be able to tell my client, we get a UDRP complaint, we get a good decision, but these people aren't going to cooperate. So you have to build in that factor and the extra cost. So yes, the data is important. I think it's important to tie it to the substantiation results so that people can make their own judgments, because, as you said, just a number of complaints, that doesn't tell the story, because some of them, you know, could be completely unsubstantiated complaints.
Okay. So thank you for clarifying, Paul. So, Evan, the desire to not disclose the data, I put the process back up here, is based on an agreement that we all discussed and worked on the process, where we have to allow for informal resolution and to address, again, the issue of what we call unresponsive or unsubstantiated, too early in the morning, the availability of data to help people know who are the contracted parties that are being breached. We publish everything that reaches a breach notice with all the reasons why they were breached. We also publish data about which areas are high in the breach notices. So again, I go back to the process where we clearly say we work in an informal resolution, and then when it's published, it's in the formal space. So.
Okay, if as you say, there was a community consultation that led to the conclusion that it's okay to keep this stuff private, I guess I'll have to go back into the I don't remember at large being part of that particular part of the conversation, but there is a benefit. If you have players that solve complaints after the third notice, but are consistently having a lot of complaints that are solved after the third notice, as far as you're concerned, they're all closed. They never go to breach. But as far as a consumer choice issue is concerned, that still is valuable data for making a decision between players. And even that kind of disclosure is useful. As far as you're concerned, it's closed, it's done, no problem. But if it goes three or four notices or layers or whatever, and so you have a history of somebody that is consistently getting complaints, valid complaints that take up your time, that take up the complainant's time, they get resolved eventually, but you're always having this runaround. If there's some that have a pattern of this, this is still useful information to be had out there with the registrars to be known, even though as far as you're concerned, it's closed and you move on.
So, minor correction, Evan. We do care. We do look at it, and I pulled up slide number 25, if I can see that far. You look at the volume of complaints in third notice. So if and when we have behavior, what we call repeat behavior, where a registrar or a contracted party is only responding at the third notice every time, that's where we look at trends, and we immediately take active action for an outreach to first understand what's being done, get a remediation plan from them if it's process or training, because that's part of our scope. It's a turnaround time that's been requested. And when we see that repeat behavior and after an outreach, it's still not being addressed, we have enforcement tools and we do escalated notices and a different approach to it, so where it's not a concern or an issue to the community. So it's not that we don't care because it closed in third notice. We do monitor that, too. And we haven't seen that behavior that you described.
Sorry, I didn't mean to imply you didn't care. That wasn't the issue. I'm just saying you might want to consider adding to your toolkit that if you get to that certain level of repeat offender, that part of your toolkit is publishing their information, because that will get them to change in a real hurry, perhaps faster than an awful lot of behind-the-scenes outreach. You know, outreach is one thing. Publishing their data, I think, will get you very fast results.
Good morning. Thank you for your presentation. And Paul's anecdotal experience notwithstanding, I'm a statistician and appreciate more of an emphasis on data because I think it helps us to understand trends and progress. I think part and parcel to that is probably going a little bit a step deeper in the statistics that are gathered, such that actual trends can be identified. Ultimately, the data is only of value if it helps us to identify challenges and problem areas that we're trying to address and then set objectives for addressing them. So, for example, dealing with Evan's problem, I mean, we don't need to name anybody. It would even be useful to know what percentage, you know, what the characteristics were of registrars that typically went to the third notice instead of the first notice. It'd be interesting to see what the trend of that was. You know, is it regional? Is it about their size? Is it about their age? Is it about number of TLDs for which they're a reseller? I don't know what these things are. I mean, that's part of the problem. I'm guessing at things that might be factors. And Evan and I were both part of a very extensive process with which you're familiar to try to come up with, you know, metrics for consumer trust, confidence, and choice, competition, some of those things, whatever they were. And a lot of those I know are going to end up on your plate. And so it's, you know, some of this is about taking it a level down and trying to understand that. I mean, one of the slides that you've shown for the last six meetings is complaints by region. Right. And so what is it about those regions? Is it primarily a language issue? Is it primarily a law enforcement issue within those, is it more difficult to enforce contracts inside those jurisdictions? I mean, when I was a little concerned that you sort of said, I wish I could reduce these numbers. Right. And but that to me is, in fact, what you're supposed to be doing. And so there are things you have control over, and there's things you have an impact on. And I realize there's a difference between those two. But at the same time, if we take these numbers down one more level to really identify trends, characteristics, and challenges, that'll be the presentation that really excites me. Not the one that says, here's all we're doing, because I appreciate that too. But the one that says, now that we've looked at the data, here's what we identify as the three primary challenges that we need to address now and going forward as your world expands exponentially, right? I don't envy you that, right? Here's the challenges, and here's what we think we're going to be doing to try and identify these three challenges. And in 6 months, we're going to look to see if those things we said we were going to do to address those challenges worked. And if they didn't, we're going to get back together and come up with three different things that we're going to try to do to address those challenges. And so it's those trends and objectives. So I appreciated the one that you showed us that you were, I guess I don't even remember what that was, closure rates, increasing that to 55%, right? I mean, I appreciate that. I just see speckled throughout here a lot of opportunities to go one level deeper and really identify what the data means, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Because right now I don't even know. I think ICANN has an issue generally that I sometimes call obscurity through transparency. Right, there's a lot of data. I don't know if these statistics are good statistics, and I don't mean like valid. I don't know whether or not that complaint rate may just be a decent complaint rate because it could be so much worse, or should we be trying to cut it in half? Right. I mean, those are the kinds of things that I guess I'd really love to get to if we could. And I know you have a lot of experience in this area, and I know you know this. And so, I mean, I'm sure some of this is just being overwhelmed with the size, the magnitude of this problem. But I mean, I think that's what we're all trying to touch on, what Evan's trying to touch on, et cetera. And what this organization is now taking baby steps into is true accountability requires having objectives. Without objectives, there is zero accountability. And that's true for this organization as a whole. But I mean, compliance is, like I said yesterday, where the greatest opportunity for understanding where the challenges lie and whether or not we're succeeding in addressing them, the ability to do that is nowhere greater than it is in compliance.
So I have a question. Have you guys gone on my ICANN on the compliance tab? Because we have provided a lot of data. And what would be helpful for those people who have provided me input, I thank you for it. But if you do not put it, where is it, the level of data you require? You're right. We do have a lot of data. We do look at it, and we look at the trends, and we do take activities. But again, I said it earlier, how can you tie outreach activities to a reduction in complaints? I haven't found that formula. If you have it, we're still working on it. Like, I have an expert who is knowledgeable in performance reporting. We look at the trends by the region. We do know the volume of complaints that reach third notice. We do know if it's an interpretation, if it's lack of understanding. In many instances, it was a lack of understanding in the communication, which helped us to introduce the different languages into the communication aspect. The biggest volume has always been who is inaccuracy and transfers, and continue to be because they're common to everybody. So we do conduct ongoing outreach activities and discussions to educate at a registrar level, at a region level, or at an ICANN meeting level. So there is a lot of information. I think what I'm struggling with is definition of what is expected. If that, you can shoot me an email, can you please provide X about Y? And here's what I define Y to be. That will open a dialogue if I do not understand the email, even if I do understand the email. If you know my style since I've been here, I will reach out to you to confirm the understanding of what's being requested. And I will set forth very transparently, the organization, whether I am able to meet that expectation and that metric or not. I will not say no without why. And I may be a misunderstanding something. So please, and I know it's frustrating because I keep hearing the same thing. And every time we think we've moved forward by providing more, we seem to not to. So there is definitely a break here in the expectation. If you can, I know I hear you, but shoot an email with, here's a definition, here's what we're looking at. And I think those are coming through the working group. We've been looking at over 40 metrics that came through.
Now 70.
That's right. That's with the ALAC input. So we have received a lot of requests on metrics. Staff is reviewing those. We have put forth a way where we're providing staff input, additional questions for clarification, or recommendation for a solution for that metric to be validated. But our understanding is that there's a new working group coming together. So we have a lot of data. Look on my ICANN. If it's not there, ask. We can see. We it's there. How will I be able to report on the different areas and the ongoing progress if I didn't have that? It's Salas. Yes.
Thank you. First, Salanieta Tamanika Mamoro for the transcripts in case it's being transcribed. But before I make my comments, I'll just preface my comments with saying where these comments are coming from. As someone who in a prior life used to regulate the capitals and securities market back in my own country, I have great appreciation for the compliance scorecard. Sometimes for those who, in terms of the, not so much the jurisdiction, but the subjects or that are being monitored or regulated, or maybe I shouldn't use the word regulated, but you know what I mean, the essence of what I mean. Sometimes there are times where there are levels of misunderstanding, if you will, on certain things. To some extent, I feel that the compliance team can only go so far as to identify metrics. And yes, we can tell them... And yes, we can tell them to identify even more specific sub-metrics. And clearly from what Maggie is saying, they're open to that. And we should do that at the appropriate place in the My ICANN space. Having said that, I think the confusion is, and I think it's something that's easily resolved. The confusion is in terms of the use of information. And there are clearly different priorities, different interests, and different expectations in the the type of analytics that's demanded. And for different, clearly for different constituencies, we're hearing different things. For example, we're hearing different things from those who are interested in law enforcement. We're hearing different things from those who are interested in, from the trademark perspective and that sort of thing. I suppose a way to go about addressing the issue is to have, perhaps in the next ICANN meeting, or we don't even have to wait for the next ICANN meeting, have a separate session that's not a compliance session, but just an open dialogue where we discuss, where we could potentially discuss potential use for data and statistics, which is, I would suggest having a blanket table, blanket forum, start from scratch, and just sort of like a brainstorming session. When we do that, what we will begin to see is, we will begin to see different expectations, different demands, and what we can begin to do is to section it, and then identify, okay, because this is the remit of ICANN compliance, they can only do so much. At the end of the day, and I'll conclude here, I'll conclude my remarks by saying that at the end of the day, compliance only has a specific jurisdiction or remit. There are certain things that demand cross-constituency collaboration from the stakeholders themselves in terms of positive engagement. And sometimes it shouldn't be just the stick approach, and it could also be incentives like the carrot approach. So I just thought I'd throw that in. Thank you.
Thank you, Salinas. A question regarding the session for start from a... Have you approached... there was a working group and... Okay, because we're also still participating from a staff perspective. There's that strategic team, I think led by my direct contact is Margie, on reviewing all 70 metrics and working through that. So could that recommendation, I will inform her of it, but if you can, feel free to draft me a note, please. I don't want to miss an element of what you shared with me because, I captured a few things, but I don't want to assume I've captured everything. If you can send me a note, what is the idea of the session? If you don't know who Margie is, I will forward it to her and see what is the right forum and approach for such a session, because it will require different activities, planning and facilitation and skill sets. But to address the other area, the confusion, you've heard there's been an intensified effort about in the regions about ICANN's role, ICANN's remit, ICANN. And part of that is also discussing compliance's role. Now, compliance is not traveling to the regions, but we have the regional VPs who are engaged and informed and represent ICANN about ICANN's remit and role. So if there is an area that you think it is not being addressed, again, feel free to send me that note, please. We know who is where, what, and when, and I can make sure it gets to the right people. Thank you.
Sorry, I guess I'll address your remarks in just briefly.
Sorry, I thought we were here till 10:30. We are here until 10 o'clock. I'm notified we have to conclude. We lost track of time. on the last resource, there is a way to contact us if you have ideas or questions. Please let us know. Thank you again for joining the session this morning.